Need a new set of optics? For more than a decade, Riton Optics has been providing optic solutions for hunters and shooters of all types and disciplines. Check out their Primal line for those products geared more towards us hunters. From binoculars and spotting scopes to your basic 3-9 scopes and longer range crossover models, the Primal line from Riton was made for hunters. Learn more at RitonOptics.com. That's Riton, R-I-T-O-N, Optics.com.
Meat in the freezer.
So happy
I'm on lunch.
It's so stupid. I think it might work.
Chaos? Like every hunting season?
Seems like it's not going anywhere, but it also seems like it could go somewhere.
You lost his favorite bag, I swear.
I would not. I'm actually pretty good directionally.
Hopefully the mixer doesn't start on fire like that one time.
Yeah, it's done some pretty neat things.
We've dealt with like every tech issue you could possibly imagine.
With each separate piece.
Let's say I have a fire extinguisher in my squad. I just got to run back to it.
There we go. This is the OKest Hunter Podcast. Never pass on shooter bucks. That's just me in the freezer. It's your tag. You hunt how you want. This is OKest Hunter.
Welcome to the OKS Hunter Podcast.
I haven't been down here in forever. It's good to be back.
I have a lot of goodies for you, actually.
I saw some boxes upstairs.
You got boxes, you got shirts, maybe a hat. I don't know. Take your pick, buddy.
Cool.
It's a smorgasbord for you.
How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. That's tuning in, whether you're in the car, on a walk, in the shower. I don't know where people listen to this. They don't tell me. Maybe they shouldn't. I don't want to get too
probably
weird.
Too much information.
But we're presented by Nosler. Nosler Ammunition. They're going to be on the show on May 7th, whatever the Tuesday is, right by Cinco de Mayo. So I'm really mostly looking forward to buying a sipping tequila.
I'll bring chips and salsa.
Yeah, guac. Honestly, that's a good idea. There's pizza upstairs. I don't know if you had pizza on the way down or not.
I didn't. Holly tried to give me some. She was very gracious, but I just ate before I came.
Yeah. I guess
you're hungry.
I did the same. I had a rookie mistake on my part to eat before coming.
Oh, Holly offered it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. You know, I'd rather be overprepared than underprepared, which isn't normally like me, but when my wife is present, that's, you get a better version of me. So that's how that works. In any event, yeah. So other partners, Latitude, they have a sale on the Rebel platform that's going to be happening here. So stay tuned for that. They also have some new stuff coming out for the Carbon. Oh, Jesus. The Carbon Series Speed Sticks.
Nailed it.
I think I got well it
done.
Right.
And I saw that, I know we've talked about potentially having him on, but Curtis Zabel, he does a bunch of film work. He's a hunting guy from Wisconsin, really well-established.
Wait.
He did all their video work for their new clips. Did you see that? It's really, really cool.
All right.
I'll put some feelers out there.
Yeah, come on. You can come on the show. Spartan Forge, you know, I pinged Bill. He must be in the trenches working his typical 80 hours per week. So I know that means there's a lot to come there. So just stay frosty, as it were. And then Rack Hub behind you on the wall there, you can see that antler on display. You know, shed season's pretty much come to a close.
It's getting green.
If you're starting to get mounts back and things like that, like having like some connectivity things, it keeps saying I've lost connection, but our Wi-Fi is good. So it's still everyone's here. Brad is waiting behind scenes. So we do have some guests with us tonight, one virtual, one in studio. We have Eric Anderson and Bradley Wilson with the Wisconsin DNR. You guys are conservation wardens.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, when the squad pulled up, I was like, huh, that did make me a little nervous. And then you came on your uniform, like, yep, definitely making me nervous.
I forgot that who the guest was tonight, and then I pulled up. I was like, shit, Eric's in trouble. I should probably just go right by.
We're happy to have you guys on the podcast tonight.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah, we're really excited to be here. Yeah, thanks for welcoming us into your house, and yeah, excited to talk with you about kind of what we do.
Yeah, I don't know who from the DNR had reached out. I forget. I don't know if it was one of you guys or someone else getting you guys to do these things. You're like, what did you sign me up for? Kind of thing. But I loved the idea when you guys had reached out. I was immediately like, this would be a great topic. I would love to do that. And I apologize for any delay in my behalf because this is a side thing for me. So it's really hard to find time to respond to emails. That being said, kind of, take a second to introduce yourselves, if you don't mind, and what your role is and how long you've been with the DNR. Bradley, if you want to go first, since you're virtual, you'll be our guest over there. And then we'll have Eric go next on this side.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Brad Wilson. I've been a Wisconsin Conservation Warden going on 7 years now. I'm located in Walworth County, so right on the southern border there, right with Illinois.
You said, was it 7 years?
Yes.
That's longer than I've done anything. That's great. And you said you're in a barracks right now. Like, what else are you up to then? Because you're not just...
Yeah, I can kind of go over. I'm actually currently in the reserves for the U.S. Coast Guard, and I actually got called up, and I'm doing my active duty training right now, and I'm located here in this wonderful barracks.
So. Did you just get called up? Was that a recent thing?
So, yep, I got called up. It was last week, Wednesday, got called up, got orders, and I had to be where I needed to be in last Wednesday. So I've been here, and I'll be here for a little bit. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for your service. That's awesome. Eric, how about you? How long have you been doing what you're doing?
Yeah, so I am going on 3.5 years. So I guess compared to Brad and some of our other staff, I'm still relatively fresh into the warden profession. But, you know, very much enjoying this opportunity with the DNR and all the different cool stuff that I get to do as being a warden. I work out of Milwaukee County, which is, you know, probably a unique station for a game warden to be working in Milwaukee County. Yeah, but with, you know, the big city that we have there, we certainly have a lot of great resources when it comes to fishing and different recreational vehicle stuff with boats and everything along those lines. And surprisingly, there are a few places where you can still hunt. You get into still a little bit of everything, just with a little bit more of an urban feel.
Sure.
So
it's just a different weight of, like, we all think of, like, I don't know, conservation wardens as being in the woods, but here you've got a giant harbor to deal with.
Yeah,
so, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, it's just your work is allocated a little bit differently than what most people probably think.
Yeah. Not uncommon for me to have, skyscrapers in the background. But it doesn't mean that the resources aren't still there to protect. You know, I was talking to some people recently that traveled in from, you know, 10 plus hours away to try and see if they could still catch a brown trout in the harbor. And we have some great resources there to ensure are there for the future.
Can you tell me about some of these hunting spots in Milwaukee?
You know, we have a sneaky little spot in Franklin. There's a little... chunk of DNR land that's part of the Big Muskego wildlife area.
Okay. My dad probably knows about that.
Yeah.
He knows all the sneaky spots and he's in Muskego, so I'm willing to bet. And if he doesn't,
your dad's going, damn it, Eric, shut your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Today's world, there's not too many secrets, especially when it comes to...
With GIS mapping and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, and just, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's easy.
It's an area where the DNR has done a lot of good work too, with putting out our different public land access maps and voluntary public access stuff for especially like turkey season. Yeah. And you know, definitely if people haven't gone and explored on those different mapping resources, jump on the DNR website and see what you can find.
Well, I'll let either one of you answer this first question, but like, how would you describe what your role is? Or I guess if we're calling this a day in the life, I think we could start with, what is your role? How would you define that for each of you, given that you're in different stations? And then what is a day in the life kind of like, if we want to go into that kind of as a next segue?
I'll let Brad tackle his role.
Yeah. So I have a lot of different roles, within the DNR. Obviously right now me and Eric are on the recruitment committee. One of those jobs is trying to recruit future wardens for the wonderful service that we work for, promoting the service, basically going over what we do, basically the safe use of our natural resources, and the education to the public when it comes to hunting and fishing, assisting people within hunter education and boating education and all of the educational classes, and assisting our partners within the DNR when it comes to water regs or environmental cases and stuff like that. So
yeah, kind of like Brad said, as conservation wardens, you know, we are the law enforcement branch or arm of the Department of Natural Resources. So we have statewide law enforcement authority over DNR regulated activities. So, you know, what are DNR regulated activities? Hunting, fishing, trapping, recreational vehicles, so boating, ATVs, snowmobiles, you know, off-highway motorcycles, and then environmental concerns also. So like Brad talked about with, you know, different things when it comes to like water regulations or big spills or another area where we might get involved, or, you know, different, you know, littering or hazardous waste and things. So the environmental stuff gets pretty broad and complex. And then we also have a real specific focus on DNR lands or Wisconsin state lands. So making sure that people are visiting our state parks, state forests, you know, wildlife management areas, different things along those lines, making sure that people are following all the normal rules and regulations. We have full police authority at our state parks and different state properties. So, you know, similar to, you know, a sheriff in Waukesha County, we have the ability to enforce all laws on those state properties.
That's a lot to know. It's like some laws and then some.
It covers such a wide spectrum, like the UTV, ATV being legalized on roadways, which was a while ago now, but I know that's really changed. Like in a lot of different townships have it legalized, and then you have trails in the northern part of the state, and it's like that's a whole other can of worms outside of what you were already dealing with, that now registrations and following speed limits, and that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'd say that's you know, one of the things where I think when you're new to it, it is a lot that's coming at you. So I think the analogy that we commonly hear is you're drinking out of a fire hose, trying to learn not only how to, you know, do all the different traditional law enforcement things, but also how to, you know, regulate those specific DNR activities. So, you know, there can be, you know, quite a bit thrown at you, but we have a really good training program that does a great job at preparing us for anything that we may encounter. But yeah, you know, a little bit more unique than, you know, a state trooper that, you know, may focus more specifically on, you know, the highways and making sure that, you know, people are behaving there, or, you know, compared to a municipal cop that may have, you know, a specific town or, you know, area where they're enforcing those laws. Yeah, we can kind of be anywhere get involved in a lot of different things, but I think that also is part of what keeps it fresh.
Always interesting.
There's always something new and different, and there's a little bit of a seasonality to it too. So, you know, in fall, you know, when hunting seasons are kind of going on, you know, that's, you know, becomes a big primary focus for us. You know, in winter, when we have snow or when we have ice, you know, ice fishing, snowmobiling, things along those lines. Summer, you know, those boats, ATVs, UTVs, people out recreating, camping at our state properties. Those are things that really, you know, keep us busy. So, you know, the second that you kind of start to get sick of doing boating enforcement, you get to transition over to hunting and then stuff like that. So it always keeps it fresh for you.
Yeah. Have you, like, so you talk about like the UTVs or the side-by-sides, whatever they're called, the e-bikes have been becoming really popular, and there's the regulations around, you can clear this up because I don't actually know what I'm talking about, around like I they're really aimed at people that have private property. Like, can I use them on a bike trail? Can I use them to get out on public land in some way, shape or form? Like, where does that fall? Is it a gray area because it's motorized, but it's electric? Is there, you know,
Yeah. I don't know, Brad, you got any insight on that one? The e-bike does stuff does get a little bit complicated when it comes to those different usages. For the state properties that I have, specifically in Milwaukee County, I don't really deal with it with hunters using them. But, you know, if there's areas where, you know, you're not supposed to be motorized, I want to see people pedaling.
Sure.
Like gated paths and stuff, no motorized vehicles.
Yeah, yeah. I want to, you know, I have no issue with the e-bike being engaged, but I like to see people pedaling and not using it strictly as a motorbike.
Sure, that's a good point. I think in a lot of those, they tend to be like you kind of have to pedal to engage.
I've never been on one.
I feel like I was on one a long time ago, but they've probably come a long way since their inception.
Well, and they make all different kinds. Like I see people all the time in town. Like, yeah. You know, like little older lady or guy going on a ride and they got like the cruiser style ones and they're just bebopping around, which is pretty cool.
Versus like all the hunting ones are like the big fat tires and all that stuff, which even just a mountain bike with fat tires might be navigable to some degree. I don't really know.
No.
But I know some hunters are always looking for the path of least resistance, or how can I get to this spot? Because you're not even the path of least resistance, but sometimes it's a matter of like access, or
yeah,
I need to get somewhere that's far away, or I can only park here, so I don't want to walk
miles
down the road. And
I'd say main thing is, you know, if you're accessing your, or if you're going to be on a property that has like specific trails, know what those trails can be used for. So if it's, you know, specifically for hiking, or if it's, you know, specifically for cross-country skiing at this point in time of the year, make sure you're following that guidance on those trails. And if they want you to stay specifically on a trail, stay on the trail so that you're not doing further damage to any of the natural areas, you know, creating your own trails.
We lost Brad. I don't know. He might have, his connection was showing degraded a little bit. It was like a yellow. And the bars are showing weak signal. You get a 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Which I think there's probably a certain threshold where it doesn't go well.
Okay, gotcha.
And I'm, because he's in the barracks, would be my lucky guess as to maybe it's a concrete building with some layers above him. You would think in 2024, but
you never know.
Yeah.
So he popped right back on. We'll see if it's any better.
Can you hear me now?
We got you now, showing stronger green bars. Your connection's showing a 10 out of 10 this time. It was a 7 out of 10 before, so.
Perfect.
Hopefully you just keep going up in our book.
Perfect.
Sorry for the complication.
Not many people say that.
Well, some of the comments that are coming through on this, so it took e-bikes to get people to start commenting. I think people are a little nervous with you guys on. So there's like, usually there's like 20 comments like out of the gate. What's up, fellas? And it's like, it's been, I'm like, is it working? Are we live? Like, I see people are watching, but there's nothing. And finally someone said, so I can just add pedals to my dirt bike, eh? No, don't do that. Well, actually, I'd like to see you try. I don't know how that's going to work out for you, but
if it's your property, go for it. I'd like to see it. Please make a video, send it to us, tag us.
Yeah, I'm going to hunt ducks on my Segway and add pedals, like hand pedals.
Speaking of Segways, my son got some money from Grandpa and Grandma for his birthday, and I did not want to give him those little hoverboard things
because
I don't want him to take off. He's 7. And he like, don't go far. It means like nothing. But he convinced mom, if I use my money, can I get one of these things? My wife and I both stepped on it, fell off immediately. He's like doing 360s 5 minutes in. So I'm going to borrow that for hunting, maybe. Find where it's legal.
That is the challenge. So then like, you guys are aids in like helping navigate some of these rules and regulations. And I've actually, like, there's been a number of times where I'm like, oh, I should call the DNR. When I call the DNR, I'm getting like a call center typically. How, there's also like, I don't know what they're called, guys, but there's like, sometimes there's a designated person to talk to for a certain region. What is that called? Because it's not a warden. It's like,
So yeah, there's different ways to contact the DNR. We have a DNR calls like customer service line that people can call into, and that's where I would normally encourage people to start if they have a general question. And I mean, even before that, I think it's surprising the amount of information that is available on the DNR's website.
Yeah,
so I think I would before even necessarily calling somebody, if you feel relatively comfortable using a computer, you know, type whatever you're looking for into the search bar first and see what pops up, because that's often the quickest way to start getting information that's relevant to your question. But if you know, if you need something further than that, I would start with our customer service center, and our customer service reps are overall great at being able to, you know, talk with people to try and, you know, understand what is the question. Oftentimes if it does come to something that is regulatory, and you know, if they don't know the answer offhand, then they'll try and get in touch or get that individual in touch with somebody that should know more. So if it's understanding the nuance of a certain fish and game law, then they would probably try and get a hold of whoever is that local warden, or you know, if it's something that is regulatory to a specific department like waterway or something, they'd probably get in touch with somebody in that department.
Okay. What are Brad, you've been at it a little bit longer than Eric. What are some of the some of the myths around wardens? Like, what, you know, I'll say this, like, unfortunately the DNR like gets beat up a lot, like on social media, the memes and the commentary and the dog piling. And I've just never been that type. It doesn't, first of all, I'm not that type anyways. It speaks to the brand that we have. However, I don't have, like, you're just human beings doing your job. You're doing the best you can with the information at hand. And I don't think, and it's a lot of it's you're a public entity funded by tax dollars. So when we go to hearings and things of that nature, and like, we can voice our opinion, you guys, you do listen, not you guys, but the DNR. So Brad, I guess the question is, because I always take like 10 minutes to ask a question, there's usually 10 of them in there, is what are some of the myths that maybe you could bust around? No, wardens won't do this, or we don't do that, or yes, we do this. Maybe have some anecdotes.
I think the biggest thing is people are, like you said, people are scared of us when we come up. You yourself said it at the beginning when Eric pulled up, you got nervous. I think that's the biggest thing that I try to get a hold of people to educate them, is that one, unlike regular police, that if they're showing up to your house, you've probably done something wrong. If we pull up to you on a boat, 9 times out of 10, we're just checking compliance, just to verify that you're in compliance with all laws. So 99% of the people we deal with are good people. So I just want to get the notion that we're not out there just to give tickets. One of our biggest things for us is education. We want people to enjoy the outdoors just as much as I love the outdoors. So that's one of the biggest things out there, rumors out there, that, oh, we're only out there just to give tickets and ruin people's days. But we're not. Will tickets be given? Tickets will be given if they need to be given. But my biggest thing is safety and education of the resources and the outdoors, so people can use it wisely.
And it's good to be educated. Like, I think Greg, if you were here, he was out on the big lake salmon fishing on Lake Michigan. I don't know if he's in Milwaukee Harbor or like McKinley or a different one. And yeah, some wardens stopped. They came up to his boat. I don't know if it was wardens or the Coast Guard. He'd done some posts on OKS Fisher Instagram account. If he were here, he would speak to it correctly and tell me to shut my mouth. And say, no, Eric, it was the whatever. And it was a big vessel. And
I think it might have been the Coast Guard.
I think it was the Coast Guard. Because it looked pretty.
What color was the boat?
We weren't there.
We'd have
to go
find the. It's on their account. But it was one of these where like everything was good except for like one thing. One of the fire extinguishers was like expired, and he's like, "Oh, I wouldn't have realized that. Thanks for telling me." And they didn't give any ticket. It was just more like, you need to go deal with that. And otherwise, good job. Stay safe. And that to me seems like a great experience, you know. And if that were the DNR or a warden, like, I think that's a fine experience, you know? And yeah, the nervousness comes from just being around official things. Like, sometimes it's so official. Like, we're pretty casual here, you know, we're drinking bourbon and hoodies. It's like, it's interesting that, I mean, of course, you guys are just, I always like to say, like, you're just people too, you know? We were chatting before we came down here,
yeah.
Eric and Eric upstairs, and you know, you talked about like having a communication degree might be a great conduit into joining, you know, the DNR, becoming a warden. So I don't know if you want to touch on, you mentioned, Bradley, like the recruitment effort of things for you two. How does one join the, how do you become a warden? Like, what is that path or that journey?
Yeah. So, currently we are, in our open hiring process, for wardens. And that, started up, I believe at the beginning of the month and runs through Tuesday, May 7th. And, you know, the qualifications aren't anything crazy to be able to apply. You know, at the time of hire, you have to be 21 years of age. You can't have a felony conviction or a domestic conviction. You have to get 60 college credits by the time you're within 5 years of employment as a warden. There's, I think, some other things regarding your driving record. So just so you can show that you have the ability to be able to operate a state vehicle. But it's not really anything crazy regarding the real black and white, qualifications. I think in kind of a broader, you know, spectrum, you know, we're looking for good people. Yeah. We don't necessarily, need to hire somebody that's, you know, overly specific into one thing. I think, you know, the main thing that we want to see is, that you're a good person and that, you know, if we provide you the right environment, for training, that you are going to learn from that and progress and, you know, learn how to become, you know, a good warden, from that. So, I think that's kind of the basics that we're looking for.
We do have a caller. I think he's a regular. I think he's called in the show 3 times. He follows us on social. It's David Nowakowski. He said he was calling to talk to the wardens. So, David, you're live on the show. Do you got some questions for the fellas here?
Hey, Eric. First, I'd like to thank both Eric and Brad for wearing the uniform of the conservation officers and, you know, serving the people of Wisconsin, and Brad for, you know, being in the Navy Reserves, serving his country. I, you know, want to thank him very much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brad, you said on the myths, you know, when you guys show up, the people get nervous. I always enjoy when the Illinois Conservation Police officers show up, when most of the time it's been when I've been fishing, and we'd sit there, and most of the times the encounter will turn into like a 10-minute conversation about how things are going, you know, what I'm fishing for, if I'm getting anything, and topics on even like, you know, the conditions and everything else. And so, yeah, I always enjoy, you know, encounters with our conservation officers.
Yeah, I echo that, David. I do as well. They have good tips.
Thank you.
And they're in the woods all the time. It's kind of like, who's been dragging deer out of here? What have you seen?
Right. Tell you. Yeah.
Driving around all those public spots, they know where a few big bucks are hiding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
No, that's great. Any specific questions or anything like that, David? Or just calling this?
Yeah. For both Brad and Eric, what is the one thing that, you know, you want, why you wanted to get into be a conservation officer? What is that one thing?
Good question.
I guess I can go first if you want, Eric.
Yeah, go for it, Brad.
So, the passion of the outdoors has always been one of my biggest passions. I grew up fishing Geneva Lake, and me and my dad always were catching fish. And one day a warden pulled up, and like you said, we talked for 10 minutes. And ever since that moment, I've always wanted to do this job. Sometime it has fallen off the back burner, and then being in the military, working with some other game and fish agencies or DNR agencies really lit the fire under me to really go for it, because I have kids now that just love the outdoors. My daughter loves fishing. My son, he loves turkey hunting. So I just want to make sure that for future. That's the biggest reason why I do this job.
Good luck following that one. That
yeah, was good. That was very good from Brad. I think he probably rehearsed that. But I would say, you know, that answer is probably somewhat universal with a lot of us that are wardens, where, you know, it may not, we may not all engage in every single activity that wardens recreate or regulate, but a lot of us are passionate about a lot of those different activities. So for me specifically, very avid hunter, fisher, and I just find it to be extraordinarily rewarding to turn something that I'm very passionate about into a career. And, you know, it's something where, you know, it's still really cool where I'm getting paid to wake up early, to go drive around on opening morning of gun deer season, to, you know, see the sunrise, listen to the gunshots, and still get to be involved and engaged and have a role that, you know, I may not be the one that's out there harvesting at that exact moment, but I have the ability to be out there still participating, ensuring people are having, you know, a safe, fun time while following, you know, all of our rules and regulations. So I think that's just really enjoyable.
I think that that's got to be one of the, I don't want to speak for you, but that seems like it would be, I mean, we've all been in the woods when a friend or a buddy, you know, harvests something and you get to be a part, maybe the tail end of that. But I bet you get to have a lot of great encounters with people who maybe had like great experiences fishing or hunting, bagged their first this or that. And like, you kind of get to be a part of a lot of those different scenarios and be there as a bystander or a helping hand to make sure everything from there on goes well.
No, it's not uncommon for me to play a role as a net man or start taking some photos.
It's funny you mentioned that. There was a first-time hunter 2 years ago using public land in Walworth County, harvested a deer, and I got to help him track it. So it was a rewarding just being there by his side and watching his reaction. I mean, granted, it was a doe, but everybody needs meat, right? So it was really, really rewarding to help him just kind of go over some tips and tricks of what to do if you do lose blood. Look for snap sticks, yada, yada, yada. So it was really rewarding to do that.
And what better way to recruit people than to leave a positive experience behind with what you did? And I kind of was thinking about that before when you guys were talking about recruitment and like what it takes to be an officer. You got to know a lot of technical information about a lot of different things, but how much of it would you say is just about your interactions with people and the communication aspect? Like me being a teacher, I know some teachers who are amazing at their subject. They're passionate about it, but the people part, maybe they lack a little bit. So it's harder to translate to people to communicate with like the students. But I know people who know very little, I would say, about like the fine tuners, but they're great teachers because of how they interact and they just make it a pleasant place to be. So do you see that at all in your profession, that like the communication aspect is almost as important?
Yeah, I would say the communication is essential for wardens, you know, and you know, a lot of other law enforcement officers to be, you know, successful in their job. You know, while oftentimes we're able to encounter people while they're out recreating, having fun, you know, there still is potential for you to encounter people that are you know, in a stressful situation, having a bad day, you know, maybe something bad happened involved in a, you know, recreational vehicle accident or something. And, you know, it's important to be able to, you know, talk with them, calm them down, you know, kind of get a grasp on the situation and be able to, you know, kind of diffuse tensions and go from there. So, yeah, having that communication skill is really tremendous.
David, thanks for the call.
Yep. Y'all have a great night, and Brad and Eric, y'all be safe out there when you're out patrolling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Good night.
Good night, David. Keep posting all those great fishing pictures, buddy.
He's been fishing a ton lately. Yeah. I'm really jealous of it. fishing he's doing. Maybe not jealous. I'm happy for him. But he's been slaying the largemouth. One of the questions or comments that came through, I'll toss it up on the screen from a friend of ours, Ryan Longren. Have you guys talked about hunter harassment? And to answer his question, we haven't yet, but that is something where like hunters can get harassed by others. You know, you see the viral videos on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram of like someone fishing too close to a pier, and you know, some angry woman comes out and says, "I'm going to call the police and the wardens, and you can't fish here." And he's like, "Well, it's a public waterway. I can. If you're uncomfortable, I'll keep going on, but that's where the fish are." And so that's one example. Obviously, there's others. I think there's a viral video. Not that they're all having viral videos, but these are just potentially good ones to like center around it from a conversation standpoint. There are some goose hunters, and a guy came up and was like, you're on my property. And like, well, we're not on your property. And the guy proceeded to just self-escalate and get really, really upset. I mean, people are like, you know, in some cases are pulling guns. It can get pretty dicey out there when you're dealing with like land ownership and trespassing. Those are just some of the conduits that might lead into like a hunter being harassed by someone that doesn't hunt. I had an encounter, and I'll get to letting you guys talk, 2 years ago when we were filming our show. And I was putting a canoe in. Of course, I did all my homework, right? I can put in here. This is public. It just opened up, yada, yada, yada. I was really excited about it. And a gal walking by was like, "You can't hunt here." "Why?" "I know I can't hunt here. I'm going to hunt down there. So I'm putting my canoe in the river." She's like, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm positive. I've done my homework." And she was like, "What are you going to do? Just go out there and drink beer and maim animals?" I'm like, "Absolutely not. You know,
it's not the plan.
Not what we do." And I actually was able to talk with her for like, unfortunately, too long, because I needed to get out to my spot. But I think I talked to her for like 15 minutes. And at the end of the conversation, she's like, "I'm glad I met you. You changed my purview on hunters, and they're not all beer drinking, you know, injuring animals." I'm like, "I'm not sure where that thought came from for you or how you got introduced to that, but it's folks like that that might not understand what we do outdoors that might harass a hunter." And then that's where, I don't know how many calls you guys get with that kind of stuff, but I'd be interested to hear any stories you have.
15 minutes, probably the best time you could spend. You know what I mean? Like, you just turn someone's perception around, which is pretty impressive. Sorry.
Yeah, it felt a little like heated out of the gate. She was definitely, you know, when you're getting in a confrontation, you can tell you're getting a surge of adrenaline.
Something she was obviously passionate about.
She
too,
was
right?
Getting, she was protecting. Very, yes. She was... Yeah. It's a good way to put it. Very mother bear over her nature. "I see the deer. We love the deer." I'm like, "I love the deer too. My daughter loves to eat them."
Brad, you got any examples you want to provide?
Actually, down by me, the biggest thing when it comes to hunter harassment is really just, what I like to tell people is don't make the argument even more heated. Go ahead and try to walk away from the situation. The biggest thing is, if you did catch them on film doing something, that just helps us with the investigation, because ultimately us as the wardens, we have to prove intent. Were they intentionally out there disrupting your hunting or your fishing? Is that why they were out there? So that's the biggest thing for us when it comes to those investigations, is trying to figure out the intent of that person. So the biggest thing that we as wardens don't want is any engagement, fighting, just walk away from the situation. And like you stated, that is another thing. If you can try to calm the situation down and talk to them, and you may end up changing somebody's views on hunting.
Yeah, I deal with it not necessarily more
being
on the hunting
suburbs,
side.
It's a little bit different in an urban area. You probably have more non-hunting folks.
Then. Yeah, and I would say I deal with it maybe a little bit more on some of our rivers where, you know, during a fall salmon run or something along those lines, we can get a lot of users that are out there trying to target one specific hole or something along those lines. And there can be some user conflict of, you know, "Hey, I'm here. This is my spot." And, you know, somebody's trying to cast over them or whatever it is. Yeah, I similar to what Brad said, you know, we don't want people to escalate those situations. You know, we have a role to play as wardens, and we don't, you know, we enjoy when people are able to, you know, safely, you know, document whatever's going on for us that aids us in our investigation.
So just wear a GoPro.
Yeah. But at the same time, we don't want people to further escalate it by, you know, trying to argue that point. Sure. You know, give us a call. Mm-hmm. Let us know what's going on. It seems like a vast majority of these situations, contact between both parties, you know, us as wardens being able to talk to people. And
sorry about that.
Good ringtone.
Rookie move there on my part. I don't know how to make that stop.
First time.
But yeah, I guess us as wardens being able to talk to the hunter and understand what happened from their side of the things, you know, potentially being able to also talk to that other landowner or other party and be able to understand their side of the things. You know, normally we're able to come to some agreeable resolution out of understanding.
Yeah.
I guess that would be a case by case scenario, but man, I think sometimes one of the easiest ways to escalate a situation or to really piss somebody off who's already elevated would be to take out your phone and start filming them, right? Like, I get how that aids in the investigation, yes. But like, that's how these YouTube videos go viral, is because they like want to get somebody riled up. Watch. So like, that may not be always in your best interest. You got to watch out for yourself. And if that's not going to be the good call,
it's a really great parenting tactic. My kids having a temper tantrum, like, watch this. You're going to show this to your teacher.
Oh, they don't like that.
And they're like, stop. So, I mean, I don't know, Derek. Like, maybe. Right,
this season, we're going to do you videotape everybody. I'll videotape nobody.
And we just happened to be, and I think Jace was out when that gal was around. So he didn't get it on camera.
It's probably for the best.
I mean, he could have, because we could have just blurred out the face. But there's rules around, like, recording and things like that. So, unfortunately, it wasn't. And we ran to another hunter in public, and we didn't film that either. But that was another great positive interaction where I think we made friends. And we're all out there trying to experience something similar, not the exact same thing, because we all have our own way of coming to the world and seeing it. But, you know, if we kind of can acknowledge that we're sharing a resource, and that in and of itself is a positive thing. I understand if someone's casting over someone's line, it's a dick move, and that could frustrate someone. And I know when like the walleyes are running, those boats get awfully close. It's like a war zone out there. If the wrong people come in contact,
when I lived up in Peshtigo, the Peshtigo River from the Bay of Green Bay, any river that's an outlet inlet from the Bay, the O'Connell River, all those just get tons of walleye spawning up there. And before school, I'd drive in the morning and there would be, you know, hundreds of people lined up shoulder to shoulder. And people would always ask, did you fish the walleye run? I was like, nope, not once. Why not? I was like, that's not my idea of fishing. Like, I like to go to relax, not to deal with that kind of stress. So I just didn't do that. But like, yeah.
I can imagine. Boat ramps are a stressful place to begin with anyways. I can't back up a trailer to save my life.
He's not lying.
Creates a lot of, a lot of like stress for me. And then others are getting frustrated. This freaking guy. I'm like,
how long is it going to take, buddy?
Hey, you can... I have, let me tell you how much, you know, I have no problem at all. I have no shame. You can get in my truck and drive it for me. You do a better job. I'm not being an ass when I say you do it. Like, literally, you can do it, and maybe we'll all have a better day.
I don't want to get into like too mega specific situations, but talking about like sharing the resource, one thing that I've always heard come up is, and I guess it doesn't matter if it's a deer was shot on public or private, but when they cross onto another property owner and property owners don't allow permission, how does that whole scenario work? Cause I've heard of that. And like, you can't, the wardens I've heard can't even do anything. Like, the person has to grant you access. Do you guys run into that situation? Do you get calls on that? Or is that a pretty common one, or is that a pretty isolated event?
Eric's looking at Brad, I think.
Bradley,
go ahead, Eric.
He's nodding his head.
You got it, buddy.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that is not a scenario where we are always able to provide the assistance that the hunter may want. We don't have the authority to tell, you know, to make that property owner have to let, you know, let you on.
That's what property owners love, is when you tell them what they can and can't do.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone loves yeah. being told what they can and cannot do on their own land. You know, one thing I would encourage is, you know, as a responsible hunter, you know where you're going to be hunting. You know, if it is a smaller property where you may have issues with, you know, a deer running across your property or something along those lines, try and go meet your neighbors ahead of time. Let them know what you're going to be up to. Let them know where you're going to be at. And ask them, hey, if this situation does occur, can I call you? You know, do I need to call you? Or is it okay for me to go on over? But I think a lot of, you know, when there's that opportunity to plan ahead of time, I think that's the best way to avoid those circumstances. Granted, I know, you know, you can't plan for everything. You know, sometimes, you know, you hit a deer poorly and it runs a mile, you know. And
yeah, right. I don't know that person.
But you know, the more you can do ahead of time to make those relationships ahead of time, I think that's going to help people avoid that situation.
Well, I'm no conservation warden, but my advice is get it in writing. Text message.
You know,
when I asked for permission to hunt where I got this guy, it was all via text. It was a bit intentional, because it's like, hey, can you hunt this property? Hey, this is the property owner. This is his phone number. This is his name. He said, yes, you can hunt it on these days. You know, this is the day I'm here. And I think, you know, if someone were to like go, you can hunt it. Oh, I forgot I had that conversation. I don't remember the day. Like, that could get a little fuzzy. I think there's, like, from the permission standpoint of all the folks that are knocking on doors now because of the GIS mapping, Spartan Forge, Onyx, so forth, like, I don't know if that's a legal thing. If you have to get in writing, some states require you to. I just think it's a good idea regardless. I don't know what our stance is on it here in Wisconsin, but.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brad.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. So Wisconsin, you don't need written consent. But it, like you said, it is always a great idea to have it. I text the landowner every time I go hunting, and just to let her know and let them know, because I want to respect their property, just because that's what we do as hunters and fishermen is we respect the outdoors, we respect other people's property, so we don't want to lose that, right? So it's definitely a good idea to in writing. Legally, do you need it? No.
That preemptive approach has got to always be best, though, because if you can make a positive first interaction, you're a step ahead. And if it's before season, I feel like that makes a big difference, because in the middle of you shoot a buck on November 5th and you're asking to go tramp through somebody's property when they're likely out hunting or someone they care about or related to is out hunting, it's a lot harder to get a yes than if you had met them and shown you're a good person 4 months earlier. And then they said, oh yeah, I'll go with you real quick. And I just see that being a lot more successful all the way around.
Too. Like, you could always, here's a gift card to your favorite restaurant. Here's a meal that I like to cook. Here's some beer. Like, peace offerings are also, they go a long way, you know, definitely not a half must have, but Greg and I hunt that farm that he's got access to, and we have delivered a couple of 30 packs there over the years, and he knows them well anyways, but it's like, you know, you didn't have to do that. No, we didn't, but you didn't have to let us hunt here either.
Yep.
And it's something that we don't want to take for granted. We, on the podcast last week, we ended the show, or towards the end of the show, someone had commented in on live broadcast about an interesting tactic I had never considered. I thought it was a very fascinating idea, but I was
the turkey?
Like, yeah, using deer decoys during turkey hunting or hunting or vice versa, using turkey decoys during deer hunting season. I know turkeys are in season in the fall, so maybe that can work. But the whole concept was they made the other this target species more comfortable in their experience. And then we had posted about that clip. And I think on TikTok, it went close to 60,000 views, and you can imagine the comments. And most people are like, yeah, I do that. It's amazing. And then others are like, hey, yeah, I don't know if you can legally do that, because that's not the target species, and you have to be careful. Kind of like, you can't fish for this species. You can't target this species of fish if it's not in season, even if you're – so I don't know if you guys have you heard of that? Is that a thing? Like, since you're here, hey, Warden, let me ask you a question real quick. What are your thoughts on this? And if you don't have the right answer, you don't have to answer. You could say, I'll get back to you.
That's a new one for me. I don't know if Brad's gotten that call before, but I have not gotten that call.
I have not gotten that call. But I guess what comes into my mind is what else are they carrying? There's a lot when it comes to involved in hunting, obviously, if they're hunting turkey. Obviously, if they have a rifle round with a deer decoy, then we have different issues. But if they're out there with TSS shot with a 410, then we have a different ball game, right? So I've never heard that question, but I have heard of
the rules are, and then get right up to that line.
See. If you guys are driving around the next few weeks during turkey season, you see like 8 deer decoys. You know those idiots listening to the OKS Hunter podcast.
Yeah. I've also heard of guys using doe bleat cans when they're walking in at night or early in the morning, excuse me, for turkey hunting if they're sneaking into a roost, because fawns are naturally loud little creatures. Yeah. So they'll use a doe bleat. I've heard that. So
I've definitely used turkey calls walking in the deer woods to cover my own. The fawn call. That's a great idea too.
Look at these ideas.
Look at all these cross around beaver calls. Well,
I joked. I was like, I want to make a whole nativity scene. Let's get some goose out there. Like, you know, let's make it like a nature party. The deer won't know what's going on.
I have a buddy that I went to college with who's sending me pictures about his turkey hunt, and they're very flocked up right now. So he's got all these like 6 toms that keep coming into the field he's hunting. He's hunting, I think, with this recurve. So he's trying to get him close. Can't get him within 60. And he sends me a picture like yesterday morning or whatever. And he's like, hey, they're all back out again, but they still won't come in. And I look at the foreground of the picture, and outside his blind, he's got about 8 turkey decoys. And I said, oh, you put the whole spread out. And he's like, well, they got a flock, so do I. He said he borrowed them from his neighbors, whoever he could get them from. Good idea.
Pretty great. Well, that didn't work. I don't need to go over there. There we got a whole flock. That's too intimidating. It's like going to a networking party. There's a lot of people in that corner. Like, they probably all know each other. I'm not going to disrupt that party.
Do you get a lot from folks you come in contact with? Do you get a lot of like people being upset with policy? Like, you guys are there to enforce it, right? And make sure everybody's safe. Do you get people complaining a lot about like, oh, if that was a stupid rule, wasn't like this, and like thinking that you're in charge of, like, do you know what I mean? Is that I would imagine you get a lot of rules. Feedback.
I don't mention. Yeah. I mean, it's not uncommon for somebody to disagree with a law, you know, and, you know, it's something where, you know, everyone sees that, you know, probably when it comes to, you know, driving a car, you know, you know, why is the speed limit 35 here and not, you know, so, I mean, it's, I think that's a universal thing that occurs throughout. You know, oftentimes people, you know, look at us, and obviously, you know, being uniform and being in a position of authority, you know, we are, and directly in front of them, you know, it's easy to have us be somebody that, you know, they want to vent to. And I'm entirely open to to listening to some of those things, as long as it's, you know, somewhat reasonable
stay calm.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
again, it's like talking to my kids, just stay calm.
Yeah. You know, if somebody's just sitting there swearing at me, you know, we'll probably end that conversation rather quickly. But at the same time, you know, people also, you know, a lot of that stems from being passionate about,
that's a good point,
you know, being out there and enjoying those different resources, and having, you know, strong belief on how that should be done to ensure their, you know, enjoyment. And, you know, if there is that ability to have, you know, that back and forth, you know, oftentimes, you know, we can try and explain, you know, maybe why a certain regulation or law is in place. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people, it doesn't matter what you say, they aren't gonna necessarily agree or disagree. But you know, if you can kind of get a little bit of you know, maybe that why out there, you know, sometimes that can help temper that passion, or, you know, that understanding of how things go. And the great thing also about the state of Wisconsin is you know, there is a citizen ability for people to you know, comment and, you know, propose different you know, regulations and changes, and you know, that's another avenue to be able to steer people towards if they you know, are very passionate about a certain area.
I think we just shared that out in the last couple of weeks, the spring questionnaire, and go to your spring hearings for your different zones, and deer council committees.
Yep.
One of the, I know we're getting towards the top of the hour here, we're at it, but I know we had a semi-late start because of tech stuff. But I did want to hear some war stories from you guys. You know, I don't know what kind of juicy stuff you guys got on the bone that you're willing to share on a live podcast. But I know that was one of the things in the bullet points here that I was like, well, this is something I'm really looking forward to hearing. Maybe it's not that juicy and I'm overselling it, but Brad, the tenured warden on the call, the conservation officer, what do you got to share on that subject?
Well, what stories do you want to know?
Well, you know, it's like you talk to anytime there's a cop at a party, you're like, all right, let's hear the stories. And they're like, well, I can't tell you these ones because it's too much. So look,
I can tell you one of my favorite. I'll tell you one of my favorite cases that I worked with in Wisconsin. We were running a decoy, and I was working with a newer officer at the time, and we were sitting on one of our shining fields with a decoy, and we actually saw a vehicle come down. It was past the shining hours, and they started shining the vehicles, and. We had a ton of shining complaints. We've had at this location, we had a ton of shining complaints, illegal shining complaints, that is. And then we also had some dead deer carcasses as well with heads cut off. So we worked the complaint, and the newer officer saw the individual shine the field right away and was gung-ho about getting out there and getting them. And we just, me and the other officers, there were four of us there. We just kind of calmed that guy down and said, just wait, let's let this draw out. And as soon as I said, let's just wait, we saw a knocked arrow go flying and stick right into our decoy. Oh.
Was it a buck decoy? Sorry to interrupt. Was it an antlered decoy? Was it an antlered, like a buck decoy?
No, it was actually a coyote decoy.
Really?
That we had out. Yeah, it was something a little different. So, yeah, we had a couple violations there, and made a good deer case out of it as well. So, that was one of my favorite stories in Wisconsin. So,
oh,
that's interesting, because you can predator hunt at night, but you can't.
So that's where it gets. Where people can get confused. If you're actually archery hunting coyotes in the evening during the deer season, you actually, if you're using a bow or a crossbow, you have to follow shooting hours.
Okay.
If you're using a rifle, you don't have to follow shooting hours.
I did not know that.
So
I've never shined with a bow, but like that's interesting. That actually, can I ask a real quick question? I told my mom that we were talking to you guys, and she's really into the outdoors, and she had a question. I don't think either of you have bears in your county, but up at the cabin where my parents are at, we do some bear hunting. If you shot a bear and tracked it at night and had a sidearm and that bear was wounded but like immobile, can you legally finish the bear, or do you have to wait till morning, or how does that work at night? You know, you've got a light, you've got like a sidearm. Is it illegal to dispatch that bear, or is it legal?
A lot of gray.
I don't know how my mom came up with that. She's like, I got a question. Ask this.
Yeah, you would not be able to dispatch that bear.
You'd have to wait till morning.
Yeah, you'd have to wait till it was legal
shooting hours.
Okay. Legal shooting
hours. Or if it, like, yeah, when's too late to call a warden?
Because
you'd be like, if you felt bad, it was suffering, could you be like, hey, this is a situation, can you come out? Because if I hit it with my car and a police officer showed up, they'd kill it. That's my logic, anyways.
Yeah, but, no, I understand that. You know, overall, before you're going to make a decision like that, I would contact, you know, get a hold of somebody. You know, it's never necessarily too late. I would say if it's, you know, you're calling a warden, I would use good discretion. You know, if you're, if it's something a little lower level, you know, trying to, you know,
don't call me. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to be calling me at 2 a.m. if it's a question. that's pretty.
I wouldn't want to be tracking a bear at night. Let's just start there. Like, to your mom, she's batshit crazy. Like, she's a,
you've met us.
Yeah, I mean, and she's a nice lady. I know this is public and she's listening. I don't mean it that negatively. I just mean like, she's a badass. If she's trying to track a bear in the middle of the night, like, no thanks. I will wait till morning just so I can you know, not be scared pooping my pants and having a different problem. Like,
yeah. And, you know, maybe that's something that would come up in that conversation of, yeah, do you really need to be doing this right now? So
good question.
Yeah.
Bear opens early.
No,
it can be warm out. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, oh yeah,
and you say that we don't have to deal with, you know, bears, but I did have to.
It's fairly feasible in my mind.
I did get a call from my local sheriff's department about a bear getting hit on I-43 in Hell's Corners.
Really?
Hell's Corners.
And
shit.
Having to go out there.
Wait, Whitnall Park over there?
Yeah, and collect a bear off the side of the freeway during rush hour traffic on
that
Tuesday.
You don't see that a lot. Bears.
No. And I'm sure Brad's had one wander through his county on occasion.
There was one here in Dousman / Oconomowoc this last season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was more than one. I don't know. I know the adolescent ones will cover some ground, but I had a story that I was going to share that was similar to that where, oh, Shining. Yeah, to your point, Brad. When I was in college, I was doing a report, or like I was in school to be a graphic designer and a media degree, a web media degree. So we
Imagine
had to
that.
Do, yeah, we had to do videography course. And so we had to like do a storyboard, a narrative, a whole thing. And so I, of course, picked hunting, and I did this. It's still on YouTube right now. It's very cheesy. But it was like, how to get into hunting. And one of the things you do, you can go shine for deer to like pattern their behaviors and see if they're on. So I'm with my now wife. We were dating at the time, and I'm in
this. This is how you want Holly over, taking her shining?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Hey, I got to do this homework assignment. I have to go shine for deer. I'm not kidding. Like, you got to film it. We pull up on 164 in Pewaukee. There's always deer in this field, so I'm like, this will be an easy thing. I'm shining, and I'm not seeing much. And then a cop pulls up behind me, turns the lights on. I'm like, why? I'm like, I get in trouble for the dumbest shit, you know? Like, damn it. I'm like, I wonder if I broke a law. Like, I don't. So then, of course, I go into full-on panic mode out the gate. And he comes to the car. I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't know, you know? He's like, I was just seeing what you're up to. I was like, well, I'm shining. I got this paper, you know, not paper, the homework assignment. I got to make this video. He's like, I know a real good spot. Why don't you follow me? And so then he led us to this like secret road by a water tower in Pewaukee on like private land. He's like, well, this is public access. You can park here and shine. There's always big bucks and deer. And I was like, I just got a private escort to this spot to shine for big bucks. I couldn't believe it. I was like, and so that, where I was shining in the video, that was the spot, and it was beautiful.
That's cool.
And so I was like, went from like, you know, complete panic without even knowing what had happened, because of course I'm just panicking out the gate, to like, oh great, I'm going to get my girlfriend arrested with me for trying to do my homework assignment. I'm like, this cop's not going to believe me. That's what I'm doing. But I'm like, I can show you the assignment if you need. Anyway, so, and yeah, I don't know if you got any, Eric, any other war stories of like, the decoy one's interesting with a coyote. That's you see a lot of those on like the Northwoods Law and all that.
Yeah.
Get out of the car now. You know, they're like, you got a lot going on here with the uniform. Like, at what point, like, do you have deadly force capabilities?
Or, yeah. Like, yeah. We are fully sworn law enforcement officers within the state of Wisconsin. So yeah, we carry a duty weapon, taser, handcuffs, all those different things. You know, we have the ability to encounter, you know, the same things that any other law enforcement officer may encounter. And, you know, similar, like in our wrecked vehicle world, you know, ATVs, boats, and snowmobiles, you know, we're very concerned with safety there. So one of the big things that we prioritize.
Those are very dangerous vehicles. Like, they're not as safe as your Toyota Camry.
So, you know, we prioritize, you know, OWI enforcement on those things and making sure people are operating safely. And, you know, anytime you're dealing with extremely intoxicated people, you know, things can
usually
easily
boating, probably right.
Can. Yeah. I mean, boating's definitely one area. But yeah, I mean, in general, in the wrecked vehicle world, that's that it happens. And it's important that, you know, we are able to handle any situations that may occur there. You know, similarly, when it comes to encountering, you know, hunters and everyone else, you know, people can get, you know, very passionate about doing those things. And sometimes there can be some heated, you know, conflict that occurs. And especially when you have people that are armed, you know, it's important that we're able to, you know, protect ourselves and protect the public.
Yeah. Still waiting for a story, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, you know, an example of that, you know, working in Milwaukee, we get tasked with a lot of different special events. So not uncommon for us to, you know, provide our expertise on the water, you know, for things, you know, like when the Milwaukee Bucks had their playoff run, you know, we had wardens on the water. And, you know, pulling people out of the water that were jumping into the water in downtown Milwaukee.
Oh,
you know, there also were, a couple different instances where we had armed subjects, potentially intending to do harm, where, you know, we've had to respond to those circumstances.
And you ever have any words like animal on the loose that shouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess one of the more memorable ones for me is, in West Allis. We had a deer that bashed through a screen door and went into the second floor of a residence.
Oh no!
House.
That's bad news.
Yeah, so I got a call from the West Allis dispatch saying that they had their officers all tied up with something else.
We
need a natural resource officer to help get this deer out of this house.
It's like a scene out of Super Troopers.
Very much so. And yeah, I climbed on the roof of the garage and was looking into one of the bedroom windows, and there was a little basket rack, 8-pointer.
Just confused.
Confused as can be. I think he had clothing, women's underwear on his antlers, and blood ripping out of his dripping out of his hand. And eventually, myself and a couple other wardens, we were able to. One was able to sneak up the stairs. I think I climbed through a bathroom window. And
that's traumatic for the homeowner. There's blood in their house. Like that's
it was a mess in the house.
Yeah, traumatic.
It was an absolute mess in the house. And eventually, we were able to kind of tunnel this animal, and had somebody come in from behind and basically bump it and blocked off so it couldn't go down the hallway. So it only had the only option was to go down the stairs, and it kind of charged out of the bedroom. Hit the other wall that we had to block it, and ran back down the stairs, out the screen door that was broken open, and back into Whittle Park or wherever.
Your ring doorbell.
You wind bumped it through the saddle.
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely wild. One of the better deer drives I've been a part of.
So the deer was okay?
Yeah. The house was a mess, though.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Between broken glass, broken TVs. Furniture... and it was a very sweet older couple that,
how did your insurance policy cover
were
that?
Were they
one?
Okay?
They were okay. I think, the husband, if I remember correctly, stood fast in the kitchen and, was there to protect the house, and we had to do our best to get him to a safer situation. Due to how powerful those animals can be.
Well, especially in close quarters where they're not sure what the hell's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
They're scared. They don't even know what the hell's going on.
Yep.
What scent brought me into this place?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yikes.
We got turkeys coming into roost or right across the street here.
Yeah.
There's an old abandoned golf course. We got deer and turkey coming through. I saw a woodchuck the other day coming into the yard. We got bird feeders out. Like,
yeah.
There was a lot of selfish questions, guys, because you're here. I forget. I talked about this last week too, I think. I forget which rule or regulation was, but you can hunt your own personal private property, I thought or think, and I could probably go find the regulation on it, but I forget the parameters. It has to be within a certain range of the dwelling or something like that.
Yeah, one thing I would caution on that is there's a difference between the state law and municipal ordinances.
For your township.
Yeah, so
Eric, don't shoot a deer in your backyard.
Ensure that make sure that, you know, if you are in, you know, maybe a potentially more urban area or something along those lines, that not only are you following state laws, but that you are also following whatever municipal ordinances they may have regarding whatever, you know, type of weapons you can discharge. I know there's some different unique and, you know, kind of different things that come into play there. So just
They're all different too. Like where Matt is up by him, like you have to go to the police department and
get certain permits from
them. I
think
you just buy it. Like I don't think you have to apply for it, but you pay $20 and you get like a discharge permit to shoot your crossbow or your bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Within whatever.
Yeah, if you're in municipality, Mequon or something.
Yeah, I think that is Mequon is where Matt's at. So I remember him telling me, "Hey, make sure if you go to that public spot."
Oh yeah, so it's good to know having some of that local travel knowledge. What's the other? Oh God, my brain is just not remembering what I want to remember tonight. It doesn't matter. Good point. Well made. Also good point. Well made. I don't know what I was going to say something in relation to that. And now I don't remember what it was, but, I do remember. It's Lee Ellis with, Seek One. Huge social following, urban hunting. They kind of like were the ones that kind of like illuminated that as a thing. And he had told a story on the show 2 years ago or something about they're hunting urban areas, small tracks. And he's like, we tracked a buck through several yards. Obviously I had to go get permission. But like there had been likely some sort of college party the night before. And so we had tracked a deer and literally the blood trail like went over a sleeping human body that was passed out in the backyard with, you know, awesome. A bunch of red Solo cups. So this dude had like deer blood all over him and didn't even know it.
Awesome. And I don't know if it was that story or a different one, but one of their deer like died in a swimming pool.
He said,
and it was
like the insurance
their whole
on
pool
that.
Was full of blood.
Yeah, it's like a scene out of the horse in the pool. It's at the gangster movie. Can't think of anything right now, but because my brain is shutting down on me, it might be a good time to bring the plane in for landing. Can you just share the resources? Like, I think I may have interrupted somewhere along the way when I was like, how do people get a hold of you? Like, how do I get a hold of a warden? Do I have to channel through the main customer service number?
So the best recommendation, and I guess it depends a little bit on the circumstance.
Yep.
So if you are out in the field and you observe a violation, you know, you're driving back home at night and you know it's after 10 p.m and you see somebody you know shoot a deer from the road or something along those lines and you're trying to you know report a DNR violation, the best resource is to call our DNR tip line, our violation hotline. Just 1-800-TIP-DNR or tip WDNR.
I have the number if you want me to give it.
Yeah, 847 something
9367. 1-800-847-9367.
So that's the number one way that we encourage people to call in if they are seeing a violation and want to report that into the DNR or a warden. Best reasons for doing that versus calling a warden specifically. While wardens are often available at all hours, you know, we do have
lives.
Yeah. Families. You know, we may be on vacation. We may be, you know, have childcare responsibilities, whatever it is. So
maybe in military barracks.
Yeah. You may be in military barracks. So that calling that DNR tip line, what that does is we have some staff that is then able to send that out to who is the nearest warden that is on duty or are able to respond depending on, you know, what type of violation it is. But people can contact us directly. Steer people to that DNR website.
Yeah, you don't have to give out the other number if you like, you don't have to.
Well, our numbers are publicly accessible, on the DNR's website. There's the staff directory.
I think I've looked it up before when I was up in Petra. There was a gentleman I'd run into a number of times and I used to like contact him if I had any specific questions. He was always very friendly and good to reach out.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. I don't know where the musky here, but
you can search by county. You can search for warden in that particular county. Or a lot of us during field contacts, you know, we recognize who's out there, who can be an extra set of eyes for us. Who's a good resource, or just in general, if anybody asks, like, hey, you know, how can I get a hold of you? We're happy to share a business card, happy to share our phone numbers normally, and happy a resource for people.
Awesome.
Great. Well, I appreciate you guys taking, I mean, you're on the clock here, but thanks for being on the show. This is a unique one for us.
And awesome.
You guys are welcome back anytime. I think it might actually be really interesting to have you guys on before deer season starts to go over any updated rules, regulations. And we could get some field, some calls and so forth. Brad, did you have any other? Yeah, thank you very much. And good luck with the active duty deployment and all that stuff.
Yeah, and thank you guys for giving up your seasons to help the people of Wisconsin. Right. You know what I mean? Like, because that's one of the things you love to hunt and fish. Well, now those are your busy seasons.
Well, so. One thing I will say that may be a myth.
That's another myth.
So it does not by any means mean that we don't get to hunt or fish. Also, our department is doing a great job at trying to. Ensure that we have a good work-life balance. One of the things that makes us passionate about hunting and fishing is engaging in hunting and fishing. So, we are encouraged, to still get out there, engage in those activities. You know, we may not be doing it on a typical Saturday, Sunday, but sometimes being able to get out on a Wednesday or Thursday.
It's less crowded.
Not quite as crowded.
Can't wear your uniform.
Yeah.
That would be cheating.
Yeah, but... we still have the ability to get out and about and enjoy all those different recreational opportunities.
Well, that's a great little nod in there for the recruitment too. If you're thinking about it, or if that's a field or a job that potentially you're thinking about it, you're not going to give up all of your time.
No, it is not a death sentence to your ability to still get out and engage in those activities yourself.
Yeah. That's great.
Good call. Correct.
Well, thanks a lot, gentlemen. I'm going to end the live broadcast and, Brad, if you want to hang on for just a second, we'll do a quick debrief and then let you guys go on with the rest of your day. So everybody that tuned in, thank you very much for tuning in. Reminder, check out our partners, Nosler, Latitude, Spartan Forge, Rack Hub. I end it with that because I normally don't, and want to make sure we give those guys the support for supporting us and helping pay for all the stuff that keeps this thing going, because there's a lot of technology, albeit breaking all the time.
We wreck a lot of stuff.
We push it to the limit. We really do. So, no, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back next week. I don't know if we have a guest or not. What do we have? I'll just take a quick peek. We have no guest next week. What's the date today? It's the
23rd.
Yeah.
My phone on me, so it's hard for me to see a calendar here. But, yeah, the next guest we do have is – do we have a – Tuesday, May 7th is this might be your – is this your buddy, Derek? Nicholas?
Yeah, from Colorado.
Okay, so that's your, and then Maddie with Nosler is the 11th. So sounds like tequila with your buddy is going to be in order then.
Sounds good.
So hopefully you're actually in studio for that one. We'll see. And with that, we'll let everybody go. But thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you soon.
Have a good night.